year the red monsters are more than the green monsters. Yeah, only one green monster. It's be red.
Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaveyam Karavavahai Tejasvina Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare
The passenger cars behind the locomotive move forward almost silently, thumping at a slow rhythm over the tracks. The train pulled out of the station, past freight yards, a neighborhood of run-down tenements. The old Delhi fort, the garbage dump at Nizamuddin, with its hundreds of crows and vultures flying overhead, and then past a marble-domed red sandstone mosque. Seated in a third-class compartment, his luggage stored beneath his seat, Abhay could see factory workers walking near the tracks, carrying their lunches in metal tiffins, and then the factories surrounded by huts of mud and straw. He passed the thatched roofs and tarpaulin tents, the cow dung fires that smoked in the morning air, the tall stacks of the Indraprastha electrical powerhouse spewed out a different smoke, and sooty black clouds poured back from the locomotive. He saw red and violet wildflowers blooming from bramble bushes at trackside, and beyond he saw the road to Mathura with its border of fruitless kidar trees. It was the morning train to Agra, and there were few passengers. Abhay would be riding as far as Mathura and then traveling by Tunga to Vrindavan. He had ridden widely the Indian railway, especially in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, when he had traveled on business in Bengal, Punjab, Uttar Pradesh, Maharashtra, and Andhra Pradesh. He had been to Vrindavan several times. In his childhood reveries over the train timetables, it had been the first place he had thought of visiting. What are reveries? Yeah, kind of like remembrances, but like thinking about your plans, whatever it is that you want to do, like this and that. So when he was young, he used to look over the timetables to figure out where he could go, you know, how much time it would take, how much it would cost, all those things. So he would always think about going to Vrindavan, like that. So that was the first place he always wanted to go. His first visit in 1925 had been but a brief pilgrimage while he had been in nearby Agra on business. In 1932, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had been in Vrindavan on Parikrama. That had been a memorable visit. Abhay had heard him speak at Koshi, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had marked him, "He likes to hear." And then at Radhakunda, 3 years later, he had been with his spiritual master again, but he had never gone like this, to live there. Dressed in a simple white dhoti, his hand in his bead bag, fingering his japa beads, he looked out the window, quietly chanting the holy name. The train passed through the dense thickets of Faridabad, and into the agricultural fields, with their interspersed patches of wheat, dal, and sugarcane, beginning at trackside and stretching for half a mile to this dry, uncultivated land that continued as far as the eye could see. The train sped faster. Rural villages drifted past the window. An hour out of Delhi, the land was almost flat and was mostly flat and open, dotted with small villages. Occasionally, he would glimpse a striking old temple. But mostly, it was the land, now barren, with a few palm trees, now cultivated with irrigated fields, under the expanse of blue sky and blazing sun. For a long time, Abai had wanted to take shelter in Vrindavan, and now there was no obstacle. His purpose remained the same. He would write back to Godhead and deliver it to the printer in Delhi fortnightly. As long as he could afford to travel, he would return to Delhi to distribute back to Godhead. But he would live in the shelter of Vrindavan. He had in mind the room at the Vamsi Gopalji temple near Keshigat, a rooftop room that commanded a view of almost all of Vrindavan. What does that mean, commanded a view? Yeah. Is that what you're going to say? Yeah. Or does that mean you go up on the roof and then you demand a view of the whole of Vrindavan and then it manifests? Like that. That building told all the other buildings to move out of the way so it could. So like that. Like that. No? And since his 1953 visit from Jhansi, he had kept in touch with the temple manager. In moving to Vrindavan, Abai was following his predecessor's spiritual masters. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Bhakti Vinod Thakur had had their house at Radhakund and had preached in Vrindavan. Gaurakishordas Babaji, Jagannath Das Babaji, Vishwanath Chakravarti, and Narottam Das Thakur had lived either in Vrindavan or in Navadvip, near the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya and his immediate followers had an especially intimate relationship with Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya had commissioned Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami to uncover the places of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan that over the centuries had become lost, was commissioned. Yes, like give a charge, give an order, you know. In other words, you call them to do a certain work, so you commission them to do something for you. So Lord Chaitanya then commissioned Rupa Goswami and the other Goswamis on his behalf to uncover the holy places of Vrindavan. Right? Because otherwise it was just fields and that. No one really knew what was there. So then by studying the scriptures and like this, talking to local people, in some way you find out what's where and everything. Because there's always somebody who knows something, some old Babaji. Many people won't know, but somebody knows. So then like this you go around. And then Lord Chaitanya himself, he uncovered Radhakund. He found Radhakund. Rupa and Sanatan had left their prestigious government posts and gone to live in Vrindavan. What are those prestigious posts? They were very nice pillars that were there, had a nice columns, you know, carvings on them. So they left those posts and went to Vrindavan.
There were, Sanatana Goswami was prime minister and Rupa Goswami was treasurer of the same shop?
Yes, of?
Of?
Small dinky village of the back half of Krishnagar.
Bengal, Orissa.
Bengal, Arisava. That Bengal included Bangladesh?
Yes.
Also at that time, Assam and all those places up there were considered part of Bengal. So it basically means the whole of East India. Like that. Very big place. And so they were the prime minister and the treasury. Okay. So those posts. But what about those other nicely carved posts and those ones? What happened to those?
I'm sure they had jurisdiction over them.
Okay, but did they leave them when they went to Vrindavan, or did they maintain their control over those posts? They left them also, so great renunciation was there. Yeah. Very good. Dressed in simple loincloths, they had lived without fixed residence, staying each night under a different tree. They and Jiva Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, and Gopal Bhatta Goswami, known and worshipped as the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, had compiled a voluminous literature on Krishna Bhakti. They had inspired wealthy Vaishnava patrons to erect Vrindavan's great temples, Govindaji, Madan Mohan, Radha Damodar, Radha Raman. At Radhakund, shortly after Lord Chaitanya's departure from the world, Raghunath Das Goswami had chanted 100,000 names of Krishna and discoursed for several hours daily on the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. There also, Krishnas Kaviraj had compiled the Chaitanya Charitamrita, describing the life and teachings of Lord Chaitanya. John, you seem to be missing your green cheddar. Now the real green monsters are back. Yeah, so what was so special about they had no fixed residence? Yes. Yes, weren't attached, right? Because if you have no fixed residence, there's no place to keep stuff, there's no place to set up a routine, you know, like this. So it's always something different, always. So you have to always be dependent upon Krishna. Right? So like that, then only how much they, you know, actually would use that they could carry with them, that was all they had. They didn't have more. So then very renounced. Yes? No? Maybe. You sure? You sure? For sure? Even those Gaudiya Vaishnavas who did not live in Vrindavan kept Vrindavan always in their hearts and proclaimed its glories. The Chaitanya Charitamrita describes the great ecstasy Lord Chaitanya felt while traveling from Puri to Vrindavan. Quote, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mind was absorbed in ecstatic love at Jagannath Puri. But when he passed along the road on the way to Vrindavan, that love increased 100 times. The Lord's ecstatic love increased 1,000 times when he visited Mathura, but it increased 100,000 times when he wandered in the forests of Vrindavan. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was elsewhere, the very name of Vrindavan was sufficient to increase his ecstatic love. Now when he was actually traveling in Vrindavan forest, his mind was absorbed in great ecstatic love day and night. He ate and bathed simply out of habit. So he was so absorbed in Vrindavan that just eating and, you know, eating and taking his bath and that was just happening because he was so practiced. Otherwise, he was not conscious of it. It just went on, but he was so absorbed. So Vrindavan, then, is the central feature within the devotee's life. So wherever they're living, they'll be remembering. So he'll be doing his devotional activities in Puri, and he'll be, you know, very absorbed in love of Godhead. But then when he remembers Vrindavan, that will increase his love, right? Let alone traveling there, let alone arriving there. So it just keeps getting more and more. So Vrindavan is the central feature. Because Navadvip is actually just a form of Vrindavan. When Krishna wanted to taste the, what is that love that Radharani has for him, then Radharani, understanding this, she created Navadvip. Right? So in Vrindavan you have a place, a small place, which is Navadvip. It has that flavor. And so here it's manifest in, you know, a very large scale. But it's still there in Vrindavan. Right? So that non-difference. If you're here, you know, then you can appreciate Vrindavan. But in Vrindavan you can also appreciate here. Yes? No? Maybe? Kind of? Yes. Vrindavan is the earthly manifestation of Lord Krishna's eternal spiritual abode, which the Lord himself describes in Bhagavad Gita. Quote, There is another nature which is eternal and is transcendental to manifested and unmanifested nature. It is never annihilated. It is the supreme destination. When one goes there, he never comes back. That is my supreme abode." End quote. Krishna's activities of eternity, bliss, and knowledge, and his abode, Goloka Vrindavan, are described in many Vedic literatures. Quote, "I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, the first progenitor, who is tending the cows, yielding all desires, in abodes built with spiritual gems, where he is surrounded by millions of purpose trees and always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis or gopis." Where is that from? Brahma Samhita. Although Lord Krishna's abode, Goloka Vrindavan, is far beyond the material world, when Krishna comes to earth, he displays his eternal abode in the Vrindavan of India. That 84 square mile tract in North India is identical with the eternal world in the spiritual sky. It means we'll make a distinction, but actually the residents of Vrindavan, they don't make a distinction. They actually just don't make a distinction. For there, it's like there's higher and lower, right? Like you have a building. You have the upper floors, you have the lower floors. So that may be there. But you don't have a... Maybe just go see what Pancharatna Prabhu wants. You know, these higher or lower realms, there's no difference. They don't see that difference. So in that, then... something's going on here. Oh, Jai Ho, Jai Tai. Okay. Have you seen inside upstairs? Oh, no. So why don't you take him? He'll take him. Haribo. Staying for some time, or? Okay, good. Very good. Yeah. Now you got to watch your step around here. Bhavananda was complaining. It's, you know, you got to watch where you're going. You might fall over and break his hip or something.
We'll catch up.
Okay, very good. Okay. Honey. Okay, so there's no difference. It's important because the pastimes are going on, the slight difference in the pastime, the birth pastimes, killing of the demons, like this, that the gopis having husbands and all, but the flavor of that is still there in Goloka, like that, because there are no demons there, there's like this. So these different things, it's felt that their husbands are there, or the demons come, but then Krishna, he doesn't kill them, somehow or another, you know, purifies them or that. Like Aristasura comes to Vrindavan, so there's a whole fight, and then Krishna wins the fight, and he puts a rope through the ring in his nose, and then ties him up at the Shiva temple, you know, down at the bottom of Nandagram, you know, things like that. So it's a slight difference in there. But otherwise, they don't see them as different. Like if you have a building and you have your upper floors, lower floors, it's all the same building. You say, this is our house. So the second floor, it's not that that's the house, and the first floor is not the house. Yeah, it's all the same place. So other people who don't live there, then they'll make that distinction because different activities go on different levels. But it's considered the same. To live and die in Vrindavan guarantees the devotee's transfer to the eternal spiritual world. The residents of Vrindavan, even the animals, are exalted. At the end of life, they will transfer to Goloka Vrindavan. Lord Brahma therefore prayed that he might take birth as a clump of grass on the outskirts of Vrindavan, so that these pure devotees would purify him with the dust of their feet. And Vaishnava Shastras declare that even by only a brief visit to Vrindavan, one can realize the Supreme Lord in his heart. Right? So it's important, so, you know, living, dying in Vrindavan, so that... means, how you say, living means you're actually, you know, specifically aware like that. Animals aren't aware, but they don't do anything wrong. So then they become purified, right? And the, you know, so everyone else, then they live there. They try to understand Krishna and all that and become very easy like that. Because in other places, you know, modes of passion, ignorance is so prominent. But in the Dham, then the transcendental realm, that flavor is there. Of course, if one's not interested, one can find so many other things. But if one is, then it is very easily available. Chaitanya Charitamrita states, quote, like the transcendental body of Lord Krishna, Gokula is all-pervading, infinite and supreme. It expands both above and below, without any restriction. That abode is manifested within the material world by the will of Lord Krishna. It is identical to that original Goloka. They are not two different bodies. The land there is touchstone, Chintamani, and the forests abound with desire trees, although material eyes see it as an ordinary place. The ideal place to execute Krishna consciousness is Brajabhumi or Vrindavan, where people are naturally inclined to love Krishna, and Krishna is naturally inclined to love them. Right, so that's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So he's making it very clear is that the tract of land there is unlimited. It expands everywhere. It's just how much is revealed to us, how much we understand. So there's different places are designated, you know, here is, you know, Vrindavan, here's Koshi, here's Mathura, like this and that, but there's still, it's everything's unlimited. But it's within a sphere that we can understand like that. It's an important thing to be able to appreciate. Right? So he's saying Goloka and the Gokul is not two different places. It's one place. It's just where it's manifest. Right? Just like you may be sitting here now, you know, and how you say, poking and pinching each other and falling asleep and all those important things. Then you go upstairs and you go over and you're at Sahutamaraj's memorial over there. And then over there you also sit, pinch, poke, and fall asleep like that. So are you a different person? No, it's the same person. Right? How do you know it's the same person? Yes, doing the same activities, pinching, poking, falling asleep, making trouble. You know, it's all, so you can tell it's the same. So that means Vrindavan, then whether it's manifest here or beyond the Viraja, you know, both it's unlimited in all its manifestations, the same place, because the same activities go on. Yes? The train arrived at Mathura. Abhai stepped down with his luggage and looked around, noting the recently constructed Mathura Junction building. Proceeding through the gate and out of the station, he found a Tunga driver, agreed on the fare, and started for Keshighat. For half a mile, the wobbling horse-drawn cart followed the road between the tracks and the railway yard. At the main road, they turned left, passed under a railroad bridge, and entered an open market. Piles of fruits, vegetables, and grains were displayed on the ground, the vendors sitting beside them, bartering and measuring while customers milled about. The women of Mathura, dressed in brightly colored saris, yellows, pinks, greens, and purples, moved busily in the market. The vehicular traffic consisted mostly of bullock carts, the drivers often squatting on the wooden yokes between the shoulders of their animals, whipping alternatively one ox and then the other with a length of rope joined to a wooden handle. Although this was the most populated area in the trip to Vrindavan, compared to Delhi, it seemed simple and rural. The sun was high, but the Tunga's top provided a partial shelter, and the summer's heat had passed. Beyond the bazaar, the road curved to the right, and Abhai saw the nearby white domes of the massive sandstone marking Krishna Janmasthan, the birthplace of Lord Krishna. Centuries ago, invading Muslims had destroyed the large Krishna temple and created a mosque in its stead. And now, directly in front of the mosque, stood a newer, smaller Krishna temple, Right, and from there then they have a tunnel that goes underneath the mosque to the original temple place. They approach the three-way junction, New Delhi, Central Mathura, and Vrindavan. The driver struck the horse with his whip, and the tanga proceeded along the Vrindavan road, edging through a herd of white cows, the herdsman walking amongst them, carrying his stick. The road was busy with tangas and slow, creaking ox carts, loaded with market commodities and pulled by squat black water buffalo. A string of small spindle-legged donkeys carried oversized loads of firewood and sandbags. What's spindly-legged?
Thin.
Thin, yes, yeah, spindly. It's very, in other words, spindly it would be, it's in comparison to everything else, it looks thin. Right? Like that means, if it's a small donkey, then you wouldn't say it's spindly, but a big donkey, then its legs are still skinny. Yes? So spindly. So does that mean that they can move around quicker? Because if they had fat legs, they couldn't be spindly, they wouldn't spin so quickly. Does that mean that the donkeys go down the road going in circles, spinning it around or something?
They don't do that.
They don't do that.
What about the other one? I'm not sure.
You're not sure. Actually, elephants do spin, so they have fat legs, so that couldn't be the problem. Then. Although much had changed in Abai's life since he had come here to see a spiritual master during the parikrama years ago, Vrindavan had remained the same. He felt he had done the best thing in coming here, leaving the heat, the traffic, and fumes, the human passions of Delhi. It was a natural relief. Yet even as he felt transcendental emotions for Vrindavan, impressions of his months of preaching in Delhi lingered in his mind. The city streets and himself, going from place to place with his back to Godheads. Life in Delhi had been constant, vigorous preaching. Now he is more than 60 years old, but he was not coming to Vrindavan to retire. He had retired from household responsibilities, but not from his responsibilities of making Bhakta Godhead as popular and sophisticated as Illustrated Weekly. He would live in Vrindavan and commute to Delhi, but he would never stop preaching. The sight of taller trees signaled the precincts of Vrindavan as the thin horse trotted along. So, when we say thin horse, what is that referring to?
Skinny,
okay, but that would be the horse or his legs?
Horse.
The horse. But the horse doesn't include legs? Okay, so there was the donkeys had spindly legs, but they were fatter. But the horse seems to have regular legs, but he's skinnier. Yeah?
Bow skinny.
No.
The legs are skinny and he is.
The legs are skinny and he is skinny. But because he's skinny, then the legs aren't called spindly. Now, if the horse was not skinny, he was fat, then it might, but his legs were skinny, then he'd be spindly. Yeah? Yes? Makes sense, no? Okay. As the thin horse trotted along past the police station and water trough for animals, on either side appeared the garden courtyards of private estates and ashrams. Fragile white mulati flowers, golden marigolds, frangipani trees, red hibiscus, trees of sorrow, and many other flowers and trees, some known only in Vrindavan, bloomed forth in the brilliant sunlight. The Radha Govinda temple loomed fortress-like on his left, and opposite in the distance, the high rising tower of the Ranganath temple. They entered narrow streets, tighter and busier places with markets and city dwellings, and then it became quieter again. At the end of a narrow street by the Jamuna River, near the Kashi bathing ghat, stood the small and beautiful ornate entrance of the Vamsi Gopal Temple, a narrow three-story building with three domes and many decorated arches. After stepping over the curbside drain and walking up three marble steps, Abhay entered the front door, the driver following him, carrying the luggage. Once inside, Abhay removed his shoes and entered the courtyard, which was open to the sky through a metal grate, on which a few birds sat two floors above. A column of sunlight lit one side of the courtyard, where a potted tulsi sat atop a pillar. The temple seemed cool and quiet. Adjacent to the courtyard was the deity room, its doors locked shut. Overhead was a mezzanine with rooms whose entrances were visible from the courtyard. A few saris and strips of cloth hung on improvised clotheslines. What's improvised?
They just kind of made it out of what they had?
Yeah, yeah, just whatever you had, you kind of put it together in any way that kind of worked. Johnny Todd. Mahant Gopal, the temple pujari, whom Abhay had known since 1954, greeted him cheerfully. He was about the same age as Abhay and had long gray hair and an unruly beard. What's an unruly beard? Kind of messy. Yeah, unruly means it can't be ruled. You can't do anything with it. You know, so no matter what you do, it'll look the same. So that's unruly, you know, kind of all over the place. Although Abhay's attire was modest, he appeared well-dressed compared with Gopal, who wore only a coarse dhoti. Gopal led Abhay upstairs. Coming out onto the roof, Abhay smiled to see again the wonderful vista. Barely 100 yards away, he could see the Yamuna, not only the immediate patch of water flowing before him, but to his left and right, a broad, curving sheet of river shimmering in the afternoon sun. There were sand deltas, herds of cows and buffaloes grazing, the flat grassy lands of the Jamuna, and plains and trees as far as the eye could see. And in the opposite direction was the town of Vrindavan, marked by dozens of temple spires and domes. Abhay's room, the only one on the roof, was small, with narrow double doors and barred windows. What does that mean, barred windows? It means you couldn't use the windows.
Windows with bars?
Windows with bars, okay, very good. Where have you seen windows with bars?
Grihastha
bar? Grihastha bar. And is that significant that you mention there, the bars being a prominent element of the Grihasthapara, meaning the like the prison of material, you know, how you say, life or something like that? No? Yes? Anything else? Oh, our windows also have bars. Okay. So that's for the benefit of the Grihastha community also, to keep all the monsters over here from getting out and going over and, you know, harassing everybody there. Like that? No. So then why are the bars there? To keep big animals out. So only the small animals can get inside. Is that what you mean? Any other ideas why there's big, there's bars? Yes.
So in the night, someone doesn't come and steal something?
Yes, yeah, so in the night, people don't come in and take everything, yes. So like this, big animals are kept out, small animals are kept in, and no one can come and steal anything. Now what if they come and steal the small animals?
Then we have fun.
Then you have a party, okay. So when the big animals come and steal the small animals, then they go out and have... They go out and howl at the moon and stuff like that. like that. All this time you've heard that it's jackals out howling at the moon. But actually, it's Gurukul boys who graduated. You know, those who've graduated, they go out and howl at the moon. Oh. Here's an example. You want to know any details? You ask him. It's a secret society of graduated Gurukul boys. You even have a secret handshake. Sitting on the apartment's roof, monkeys with their tiny offspring sat watching, unalarmed. Just outside the door, what does that mean? The monkeys were unalarmed.
They weren't scared.
So it doesn't mean that they don't walk around. Some monkeys have alarm clocks and some don't. So the ones that don't have, these were unalarmed, but there's ones that have alarms on them and stuff. So that's their service in the morning. The alarms go off, they wake up everybody in Vrindavan. Yeah? No? Oh, okay. That's how Jai Patakamaras used to have a cat alarm with a bugle. There's a cat holding a bugle. And when that would go up, it would play reveille very loudly and then start shouting that you're supposed to wake up. It wasn't a pleasant alarm. It would actually, I'm not joking, that's what it'd do. So that way also monkeys could be alarmed. This was a cat that was alarmed. Just outside the door, a 2-foot-high cement pyramid signified that the temple deity was directly beneath. And so that's one way, is that sometimes if you have a regular building, deities are there, then the place where they are, then they'll many times put domes on the higher floors and all that. I'm not still sure if it's there. When Radha Madhava used to be in the Lotus building downstairs, and in the bathrooms above, there was something that marked where they were on each floor, all the way up. But then after they moved, then I think they removed those. Abai entered the room. Through the barred windows, he could see the palace at Keshigat, the venerable tower of the Gopinath temple, and beyond the uninterrupted flat river, the green banks and the sky. As we said, green banks, and then he came. After acquainting Abai with the details of the room, the small kerosene burner, the rope and bucket for drawing bathwater from the well to the roof, Gopal meticulously produced a government-stamped rental agreement. Abai wrote a short paragraph declaring himself a disciple of the late Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, and attesting to his renting the room at 5 rupees per month. Both parties signed. After his bath, Abai took prasadam and rested. When he heard the bells ringing in the temple below, he went down to see the deities. Gopal, who had been the temple's pujari for many years, had seen its reconstruction in 1923. Had told Abai that the temple deity, Vamsi Gopalji, had been installed 350 years before by Mahant Prahlad Das of the Nimbarka Vaishnav Sampradaya. Gopal himself had installed the deity of Radharani. Vamsi Gopalji, standing in a graceful threefold bending form and holding his flute, was very appealing. He was 3 feet tall and of black marble. Radharani, slightly shorter, was of brass. They were simply dressed in rough white cotton and illuminated by the dim glow of a kerosene lamp. Abai could see that they were being cared for, but because of poverty, there was no opulence. Right? So you could see it was clean and nice, they were taken care of, the daily puja was going on. But there wasn't much facility, and so then everything was very simple. But they weren't neglected. Some temples you see they're neglected and that there's not anything taken care of, but the people are doing very nicely. like that. Sometimes you see like that. He returned to the roof as the sun was setting over the town of Vrindavan. Having the entire roof's walkway to himself, Abai walked and chanted japa, enjoying the cooling early evening breeze from the Jamuna. Occasionally, a solitary boat would pass on the calm waters of the Jamuna, and a devotee, somewhere unseen, could be heard chanting evening prayers at Keshighat. He felt pleased with this location in the heart of the pastimes of Lord Krishna. He was not a newcomer, spending his first day in a strange town. Everything there was already familiar and dear. As Vrindavan was Krishna's abode, Abai was Krishna's servant. The servant of the six Goswamis, the servant of his spiritual master, he felt at home. As day turned to twilight, temple bells rang throughout the town. Abai walked to the western side of the roof and looked into the city of thousands of temples. The Govindaji temple, the Ranganath temple, and thousands of smaller temples were having their Sandhya Artik and Kirtan, glorifying Lord Krishna. Abai responded to the sights and sounds of Vrindavan as only a pure devotee could. His thoughts and emotions were full of appreciation and awareness of Krishna, Krishna's devotees and Krishna's land. Naturally he began to think of preaching, hankering for others to know the intimate peace and ecstasy of Vrindavan. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was inviting all souls to join him in his eternal abode. Yet even in India, few understood, and outside India, people knew nothing of Vrindavan or of the Jamuna or of what it means to be free of material desires. And I remember one time, you know, this point of being freed from material desires, or having a Sunday program. And on Sunday, the guests would come and, you know, it's prasad, they take prasad, and then you go and sit with them and talk and discuss philosophy and all that. So I remember one time discussing with one person about the spiritual realm. And saying about in the spiritual realm, then, you know, there's one is, you know, freed from all material contamination, there's no material desires, there's no lust, like this. And then the person, you know, stopped eating, just looked and said, no lust. He said, why would I want to go there? You know, so it's like that. So the Mani Prabhupada says is they didn't even know, you know, let alone knowing Vrindavan and that, they wouldn't know what it means to be free from material desires, you know, so, like that. Why shouldn't people all around the world have this? This was the abode of peace, yet no one knew anything of it, nor were people interested, but this is what they were actually hankering for. Abai thought of back to Godhead and how, by Krishna's grace, he might expand his preaching beyond India to the whole world. His godbrothers, it would have been better if they had all worked together in the Gaudiya Math, but many of them were at least keeping the regulative principles. None of them, however, seemed to be doing much beyond maintaining a temple here, an ashram there, worshipping a deity, eating and sleeping. But there was so much more to be done in broadcasting the glories of Vrindavan. Abai chanted and thought of Krishna, gradually turned his task to producing the October issue of Back to Godhead, due to be printed shortly in Delhi. He had a deadline to keep. Right? So we saw before, when Prabhupada went to stay at the Mat in Delhi, that, you know, they were busy just taking care of the place. They, you know, didn't have much funds. They were just busy taking care, so they weren't interested in actually expanding the preaching, because that would mean more investment. And then that's one godbrother. He's having to maintain his little place. Then, you know, Keshav Maharaj was, you know, trying to set up some own place for himself. Then Mathura, like this, godbrothers all over India. Then they had a temple, an ashram, or some place like that. They do a little preaching. But mainly that preaching would just kind of maintain what was there. It wasn't big, it wasn't dynamic, it wasn't like before. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had devotees going to the West and preaching and doing all these things. So, you know, everything was very, very, you know, just on, you know, maintaining like this. So Prabhupada was thinking if they would just cooperate together, then they could easily establish a world mission. But when they each just work on their own, then nothing much gets done. The next morning, before sunrise, the residents of Vrindavan were astir, bathing in the Yamuna, performing puja to their deities, reciting mantras. But Abhai was awake even before most, writing in stillness between the lamp in his rooftop room. As he wrote diligently in English, scriptural references appeared and took their place within convincing arguments. For hours he wrote, page after page in an exercise book, until gradually the chirping of awakening birds signaled the end of the dark night stillness. Soon the sun would arise. Keeping to his regular schedule, he put aside his writing and began chanting japa, staying in his room, uttering the Hare Krishna mantra in a soft, deep voice. Even before the first traces of light in the sky, before the river was visible, a few Babaji's reciting prayers made their way through the streets, heading for the Jamuna. By 4 a.m., gongs and temple bells throughout the city heralded the Mangal Arti of the deity. Abhai continued chanting alone for another hour. Then he prepared to bathe, lowering the bucket on its long rope and hauling water up to the rooftop.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.